As we all know, multi-cores brings a rather significant paradigm shift to programming, and this has made the task of producing correct and efficient programs a little bit harder. Microsoft has experienced an increased interest in our tools and technologies for multi-core programming recently. For example, our newest version of Visual Studio makes parallel programming much easier than in previous versions. So it's obvious that many Windows programmers are getting ready for this rather significant shift, and that new tools and education in parallel programming is in high demand. Here at Microsoft, we have put major emphasis on highly productive computing in the HPC area, and what you'll see in this webcast is a tool that complements our offerings in a good way. The goal is productive computing as well as highly productive programmers. What Microsoft likes about the Acumen approach is that it automatically helps programmers produce more efficient code and at the same time serves to educate them as to the parallel programming process. We think that's a valuable combination. So even though the applications that they analyze can be very large and complex, and the architectures can be complex as well, Acumen provides for an optimized solution, and the end user or the user interface of the Acumen tools has been kept intuitive and simple. And the advice given by the tool is straightforward and very easy to understand and helps with that overall education process. Hopefully, this will enable a short ramp-up for the many Windows programmers who are moving towards parallel programming and towards the path of highly productive parallel computing on Windows. Today's webcast is presented by Professor Eric Hagerson, CTO and founder of Acumen. Eric's experience in parallel architectures and parallel programming goes back almost 30 years. Starting with data flow research at MIT in the 80s, and as a chief architect for high-end servers at Sun Microsoft Systems in the 90s, and then research in performance and modeling and analysis technology at Uppsala University during the last 10 years. About 4 years ago, some of these research ideas came together, and Acumen was formed. So without any further delay, I'll turn it over to Eric. Eric?
Thank you, David, for that introduction. So what I'll do today is to take you on a quick ride through the Acumen technology and show you how we think this could be applicable to Windows programmers. So multi-cores are here. There are lots of reasons for that. The two major reasons is that they promise a good theoretical performance, and they also are the only low-power path towards good performance. It's easy to remember that that is the reason we made this transition. However, just moving to multi-core does not automatically give a good performance nor low power consumption. It really requires that the program that you run on the multi-core hardware interplays with the software, with a multi-core hardware in a nice way. Specifically, we need to pay lots of attention to the memory hierarchy and how that's treated and how bandwidth is used, how threads interact with each other, and so on. So there is actually no free lunch, but we think that there is plenty of low-hanging fruit. Our experience is that some very simple fixes can get you a long way and get you really good return on your investment in time and effort. And also that with the right tools, you can find these simple fixes in a very easy way. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about tools that will help you find those simple fixes. Let's look first at the existing tools we have at the table. We have tools called debuggers. Debuggers help you pinpoint and find logical errors to make your code execute correctly. Then you have other tools called performance profilers. Performance profilers typically gathers performance information and present them to you, but then it's up to you, the user, to try to figure out what to do with the performance information that's been gathered. What I'm here to talk to you today is instead of a new kind of tool we call performance debugger. So the performance debugger not only collects the data, it also helps you pinpoint and find the problems in your code. And also will explain the nature of the problem as well as the solution to the problem to you. So going back to what David talked about, this will lead to productivity in many different ways. If your software could be made more efficient, that means that the hardware investment you have can be used in a more productive way. But using these tools also means that even if you're not a performance expert, you will be able to optimize your code. That means that these kind of optimizations can be done early in the design cycle. If you are a performance expert, that also means that using these kind of tools, your life is going to be much more productive, since much of the footwork and gathering the data and analysis will be done automatically, and your expertise will come at the tail end, which involves applying these changes to your code. This is an example of what the performance debuggers look like. At the highest level, they give you four different kind of gauges that tells you sort of report cards about your application. So the first gauge tells how you're using the memory bandwidth. The second gauge tells you how much problem you have with memory latency. The third gauge tells you how much data locality your application has. And the fourth gauge will tell you about the thread interaction and whether the interaction pattern is a good or bad one. So at the top level, you will know whether there are problems that should be attacked in your code. Now opening the report, this is what the tool will show you. Three windows. We have one window, which is the what window. So in the what window, we list all the performance problems that we have found. We name them, give you statistics that let you assess whether that's a good or a bad problem, whether it's worth going for, and we sort these problems worst first. You click on one of the problems, and what will happen is that we will take you to the source code line where that crime has been committed. So what the problem is and where the problem has been performed. And also, we have a third window that explains to you how to fix the problem. This is, you know, if you're not a performance expert, that's this way we're going to teach you how to do this. If you are a performance expert, there are lots of information hidden underneath these expansion signs, and you can click on them and ask us for more data, but we will not stuff data down your throat unless you really ask for it. There is also a question mark in the lower left window. Clicking that window, the question mark will take you to the context-sensitive manual. So, for example, it will tell you exactly how to fix the problem that you are trying to solve right now. So that's a little at a high level what the tool will look like, and maybe in just a few minutes we're going to go into more details about it. So the way to use this tool is to have this tool make an analysis of your application. So what you see here is one application, Cigar, a generic application used in to create games and so on. This application running on 1, 2, 3, and 4 cores, it looks like it has a almost perfect scaling. So this looks like a good application, doesn't need any more tuning. Well, if you run this application through our tool, the performance debugger will advise you that we have found one data structure we really think that you should duplicate. So duplicate, adding more data, counterintuitively, that is actually going to make a big boost to your performance. So if you apply that change, that means, you know, normalized to the bars on the top picture, this is a new performance you will get, almost a 10x performance on a single-threaded application, and for the four-way threaded application, you get almost a 7x performance improvement. And this is just at the click of a button. So this is the outline of what I'll talk about today. First, hopefully I motivated why performance debuggers are important, why they are a fast path to quickly get efficiency. Next, I will talk about performance problems that we will tackle. And lastly, we'll go into a performance overview and a debugging real demo session. So let's talk about the performance problems you need to tackle to get good performance in multicores. So the first problem that you have to tackle is to, of course, realize that the binary is not just reading, writing in memory, as you know you may be taught in programming class, but there is actually deep memory hierarchy between the many cores on the chip and the slow and boring DRAM memory that is, resides outside of the chip. So you have to, you appreciate that there is limited cache capacity at all these different levels. The deep cache hierarchy, DRAM is really slow, and that the bandwidth to DRAM is limited. So in order for you to get good performance, you have to deal with issues such as how to allocate data, how to promote temporal data reuse, spatial data reuse, cache utilization, how to insert software and hardware prefetching, and so on. This is normally way above the head for a normal programmer. Looking at the different kind of performance problem that you have to deal with has to do with cache waste. So assume that you have two different programmers running on different cores. Now the problem is that those programs will actually have to share some resources on the multicore. More specifically, they will have to share the second level cache, the dollar sign in this picture. So it means that it's going to be less cache resources per application. But even more so, there's going to be some sharing of the of those resources one way or the other. So in this picture, we show that the red core will get most of that shared cache, and the green core will get less of that green of the shared cache. And typically, you as a user don't have any control at all over how this sharing takes place. Actually, if you look at it more carefully, it could be that some of that cache space is wasted. You may drag lots of data into the cache that never ever is going to be reused by those applications. And it could have been much better off if you in the first place had some appreciation of cache sharing effects, cache pollution side effects, and how to optimally use those resources. And if you could steer the usage of the data such that maybe the green application should be using most of the cache resources. That's the cache waste problem. If you run a parallel application, multi-threaded application, there are even more issues to deal with. So the different threads running on a different cores may be reading and writing the same piece of data in the memory. That means that the cache coherence will kick in. The cache coherence will make sure that you will get the coherent view of the memory, but also produce lots of coherence traffic on the chip. So if you like coherence traffic, producing consumer sharing, false sharing, and so on. And I'm going to get back to false sharing in one of my demos. So let me just talk about what sharing, false sharing is. So false sharing means that these cores to the left and cores to the right may be reading, writing different variables in memory, or in this example, the increment in the values of those variables. But since Murphy has been involved, Murphy has decided that both A and C is going to be allocated to memory location in the same cache line. That means that in the cache coherence view of the world, this is still going to be shared data. That means that you're going to create cache coherence traffic when you update those variables. Even though the variables are private, you will still need some create some cache coherence problem. It's clearly going to have much effect on your performance. So once more, there are lots of issues to deal with as a programmer to make sure that your parallel application runs well, so how to allocate and divide data, how the inter-thread data dependency is set up, communication patterns, and so on. Clearly, things we don't want the programmer to have to deal with in the first place. Lastly, thread placement is important for a parallel application. For example, many of the multi-core are non-uniform inside themselves. For example, the quad core 2 architecture, the magna core of AMD, are not uniform. And most important, multi-socket nodes in HPC systems are not uniform, because a core inside one of these multi-core sockets has a shorter access time to its local memory rather than if it accesses memory that happens to reside on another multi-core socket. Also, all the cache coherence traffic we talked about before is going to be much cheaper if you interact with cores that are on your same socket as yourself, rather than if you interact with cores that are on a different socket. So in order for you to get good performance, there are more issues to deal with. And first of all the issues we talked about so far are now even more important, but you also have to deal with job scheduling issues, how to bind threads to cores, and so on. That ends the first two bullets of this presentation. And actually, I can see I have a question here that's been typed in. So I don't even know this, but there is a way to type in questions to me during my presentation here, and they will pop up on my screen, so I can answer them on the fly, or if I may also park some of the questions and answer them at the AIL end of this session. So I got a question here asking if we only can help optimize multi-core performance, multi-threaded performance, and that's a great question. Actually, I talked about four different kind of issues that we tackle, and the first issue just deals with the memory hierarchy, and those kind of performance optimizations are good both for single-threaded as well as multi-threaded applications. Also, the cache waste that I talked about as a single problem is also good for single-threaded and multi-threaded applications, while the two last issues I talked about, the coherence thread interaction as well as the placement of threads, only applies to multi-threaded applications. So with that, let me go on to the demo session here and talk about, show you a little how the tool works. And at this point, I really expected to be the controls to be handed over to my desktop. Or maybe Heather can help me get the control to my desktop.
If you just go forward one more slide, there you go.
Okay, there it is, thanks. So what you see here, of course, is the normal Visual Studio window. We have an application, we have a product loaded here called All Issues. It's just this, you know, normal C application, and this is the test application we use ourselves with lots of performance problems in it. What I'll do here is to show you how to use the version of our tool which is integrated into Visual Studio. And what I'll do here is I, under the Tools menu, I open the Acumen Thread Spotter, and I say I would like to sample, which means I would like to start this application, this normal binary. No special magic about this binary. I would like to start the binary which is attached to this product here. And then a question dialog box will come up here. Lots of these values have been set in this dialog box, and we want to go through all the different options you have. Just very easy to click through this dialog box. And just a few words about this screen here. This screen asks you what kind of architecture you would like to optimize with respect to. So the default here is the architecture that I have inside my desktop myself right now, but you can actually choose to optimize with respect to whatever architecture, x86 architecture you're interested in. So we have a long list of different architectures you could optimize with respect to instead of just optimizing for the architecture you happen to have inside the box. But right now we're just going to keep default and optimize for our own architecture. So that's it. Just click the button and off we go. We started our application and it's happily running. So while the application is running, let me show you what's really going on inside this desktop. So the binary, an ordinary binary, is running, as I said. While that binary is running, we apply a part of the Acumen technology which will collect some runtime information about what's going on, some dynamic information. And as we can see now, that application has actually stopped executing. And so while that application is executing, we gather this information into the runtime information into a fingerprint file. Offline, that's what's happening right now as we speak. This fingerprint file is used as an input to an analysis technology. And the analysis technology will also ask what architecture we would like to optimize with respect to. So as you saw, we could have optimized for an Atom architecture if we wanted to do that as an input. So the fingerprint information gathered is completely architecture independent. We can do this analysis with respect to any architecture. For example, we could have said, you know, even though we are using this desktop on an airplane, we would really like to optimize for the server we have at home. So just enter the server parameter and that's going to happen. Or you may say, you know, I would like to run, you know, some kind of cloud service so that you must specify the architecture of all the cloud service, and you do that analysis even though you happen to be on that airplane doing the analysis. And once the analysis is done, we're going to present the report to you. So that's what happened in the background here. We got the report with the same kind of gauges as I showed you before. Inside Visual Studio, we can open this report. It gives you a list of performance problems that we have found here. Going through this list here, you know, I can click on one of them, you know, please help me fix this loop fusion problem. Take it to the spot of the crime. We find the first of the two loops that can be fused, and using this window to the left here, we also will help you identify the second loop that we will have to be used. We can click on one of these question mark buttons, and the context-sensitive manual comes up and so on. So that just shows you how this tool is integrated into Visual Studio. There are, you know, we have standalone versions of this tool as well. So let me show you, instead of this toy benchmark, let me show you some real applications and the kind of reports that they produce. So for example, here we have an application from the Spec Benchmark Suite called LibQuantum. LibQuantum is an open source physics application simulating quantum computers. It's widely used in the physics world. It's been used for 10 years out there. And we took this code, that's a well-known code, but I've been trying to optimize this like crazy. We took this code and we ran it through our tool, and as you can see on these gauges, we do have problems with memory bandwidth in this application. We do have problems with data locality in this application, while memory latency is okay and there is no thread communication problems at all. Let's open the report, and what you see here is the laundry list of all the performance problems that we have found in this application. So the list that you can see here, we'd say that fetch utilization seems to be the biggest problem. Let's click on the fetch utilization problem, and we take you to the spot of the crime. We show you the source code line where the fetch utilization is a problem. And you may ask yourself, what the heck is fetch utilization? Well, as a performance expert, many of you already realize what's wrong with this very line we identify here. If you're not the performance expert, you go to the how window, and here you see lots of question marks popping up. So if you would like to, for example, if you would like to know what fetch utilization is, you click on the very red question mark you have in that left window, and here comes the explanation in our context-sensitive manual. So, for example, we come up with a plausible explanation for what we think the problem is with your code. And we say that you probably have a record of structs in your code. That structs have some number of members, in our example here, 4. And we think that in your important loops of your application, you only access some of these members. Okay? That means that, you know, the way the data is laid out in memory, you touch the green data, you never touch the red data, but since this is the way that a compiler typically lays out the data in memory, that means that inside the cache lines that you drag into the cache, you're going to have some green data and some red data, even though you're only interested in the green data. And what we suggest to you instead is that you have to allocate a different data structure. We show you how that could be done, and we show you, try to explain what's going on here. So this is just one example of what's going on inside here and how we sort of explain to a non-expert what's going on and give you lots of interesting information hidden under these arrows down here, but that is not typically visible to all users. I should also... okay. So just before I leave this slide, so I have a long list of different issues here, issues dealing with bandwidth, you know, and we have all different kind of categories of issues that I'm going to show you later on in other applications. I can also show you the loops that we found in this application. We found a loop that is responsible for 70% of the misses, and you could, instead of going issue by issue, you can go loop by loop and try to fix your problem. We have a summary slide here that shows you a graph saying that if you could change the cache size of your machine, this is how the miss rate in the cache would change as a function of cache size. Of course, nobody could make these changes and nobody could measure this kind of information on a real native execution. Actually, using our technology, we can still draw this kind of curve. So we see here we have a miss rate of about 4% with this application, and we have a down further down here we have a utilization curve, and the utilization curve shows that about all the data that we bring into the cache, about actually slightly less than 50% of that data is ever used by this application. And we already have explanation for that, and that sort of tells you how this analysis can be done. Okay, so let's say you know that you're a good student and that you follow our advice and you fix your problem. What you will have then is you can analyze the application that you fixed. You remove that kind of performance issue. And you can see how the gauges change when you go from the before the fix to after the fix. So things are much better here. Still, when I open the report, I'm not happy. I'm still going to find lots of problems in your code. More specifically, I'm going to find lots of loop fusion problems and I'm going to take your hand and I'm going to show you how to fix those loop fusion problems, where they are in the code and how to fix them. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go through this exercise. Instead, let's assume that you did fix these loop fusion problems that we found. You're going to rerun the tool again. Now, your analysis will come up with even better results. So this is unoptimized. This is just fixing the utilization problem. And this is fixing the loop fusion problem. So things are getting better and better. Still, when you open this report, there are still things to fix. For example, when I press this tab, it's saying pollution issues. You can still find lots of places in your code, in your optimized code, where you're polluting the caches. You drag data into the cache that you never reuse. And if you ran this application together with another application, you would make the life of the other application miserable. So this is, the type 2 problem that we also will help you fix using this. I showed you how to fix type 1 problem and type 2 problem. Now going into the type 3 problem, which had to do with a parallel application, and what I'm going to show you here is the report of the parallel application. So same dials as before, open the report. Open the report will get you in the same way as before. We will show you the list of the performance problems that we found. Since I want to talk about multi-threaded problems here, let's press the multi-threaded issue tab. And pressing that tab will change the list to problems that has to do with multi-threaded. So, for example, I'm going to complain about communication utilization, and I'm also going to complain about false sharing. Remember that problem we talked to some length about initially. So false sharing, you do actually have false sharing in your application, and I click on the false sharing, and that will take you to the spot of the crime. So you're accessing a data structure right here, and you do it in a way such that you create false sharing. And performance expert would really, quickly realize what's going on here. I'm going to click on the second false sharing problem, which is easy to explain in a short time. So what's going on here is that we have an array, actually array of flags, and each thread will access its own local set of flags. It will read and write those flags, but since they have been allocated in a global structure in a non-optimal way, the cache line will actually contain flags from several threads, and you could create lots of false sharing. Okay, so here you have it. We analyze the false sharing for you. We take you to the spot of the crime, and this is suddenly became a problem which is easy to solve. So looking at the summary slide here, upgrade misses is something that has to do with how much cache coherence activity is going on, how much the different threads communicate with each other, and on the resolution of your screen, you actually won't be able to see the bottom part here, so let me move that up. You can see the lowest, very lowest window that hasn't been available on your screen. So what you see on this lowest window is that how these upgrade misses are divided between the different threads. So we have 3 × 8⁻¹⁰. That's the number of upgrade misses, and as you can see here, they're pretty evenly divided over all the threads that are running here, actually make that, let me move this even further up. You can all see on your screen what's going on here. Okay, so pretty much all the threads are experiencing lots of fault sharing, and that's how they produce all those communication misses. What I should have told you in the first place is what we do now in with this example here is to optimize a multi-socket application. This is an application that with 8 threads, 4 of them running on one socket and 4 of them running on the other socket, and we are looking at the coherence traffic that goes between the sockets. And all these threads, all 8 of them, are experiencing lots of inter-socket communication. That's sort of bad. We know that it's fault sharing, so we know whether we can rewrite the code, but there is actually a different fix that we can propose to you. So what I do now is to click on yet another of my already prepared reports here. This is a report analyzing the same application as the one we've seen before. I open the report, and we're going to look at the multi-threaded problems, and as you can see here, most of the multi-threaded problem went away. Instead of having a long list of multi-threaded problems, now we all have a fairly short list of multi-threaded problems, okay? So what happened here? I told you I analyzed exactly the same binary. Actually, I analyzed the same fingerprint. I didn't even have to rerun the application. I produced a new report. So what I did when I created a new report is to try out a new binding of threads to cores. Right? Explicitly, when I wanted to analyze the fingerprint, I said, well, how about if you try out a new binding of threads to cores? And I proposed a new binding, and turned out that that binding had much less problem with all this cache coherent stuff. And look at the number of upgrades we have in this binding. So what we see here is almost one order of magnitude, 4 × 10⁻⁷. That's the number of upgrade misses. So that's a 10 less a coherence problem. And let's see how the coherence, these upgrade misses, are now divided over the different threads. Actually, looking at this list, there are actually only 2 of the threads that are experiencing any upgrade misses. Most of them don't have any inter-socket upgrade misses because I tried out a new binding of threads to cores, and there you have it. This obviously is a much, much more efficient way to run that application. So I'm sorry if I rushed through this tool. What I wanted to do was to introduce, show you different aspects of how this tool can be used. And I really wanted to show you how we could deal with all those different performance issues in the single tool. So now going back to the normal program here, before I leave the demo part, I just wanted once more to highlight that, yes, we have an integrated version of our tool into Visual Studio, but there are a couple of other ways you can use this tool as well if you're not a Visual Studio user. So this is a standalone GUI interface. It looks very much like the one you have integrated in Visual Studio, but this is just a standalone GUI yet to start independent of Visual Studio. Here you just fill out the name of the application and the environment parameters. You specify where you want this performance analysis result to be stored. You specify what architecture you would like to optimize with respect to, and you click one button. Of course, there are much more, you know, bells and whistles hidden underneath many of these tabs, but in essence, this is all you have to do to start this tool, to start the analysis. We also have a command line interface. So the command line interface, you know, as you expect, you have one way to create the fingerprint files from a binary, or you can attach to an already running binary. You can, you know, analyze, you know, PowerPoint, how that is performing. For example, out of the box binary PowerPoint, you can still do this sample. Or you can attach an already running, or you can start an application from inside any way to use these kind of tools. And then, of course, you have an analysis part as well, where you use the fingerprint as an input. So this is, you know, I explain how this tool can be used, and just one slide about how that fits into the design flow. So let's say that you have an already great sequential application, and you would like to make it run well on a multi-core architecture. These are the steps that you ideally should perform before you even think about parallelization. What you should do is to optimize the sequential code to make sure that you treat the memory hierarchy well. That you have to do that before you do the profiling and parallelization. Otherwise, you may profile, you may parallelize the wrong part of your application. It may look like you spend more time in parts of the application than you actually are doing things that easily could be optimized away on the sequential code. After you have produced your parallel code, it's time to take out all the parallel quirks, the fault sharing, the communication patterns that are bad from a cache coherence point of view. After you do that, you remove the cache waste, and then you got to replace the threads. And as I already showed you in the demo session, we can actually tackle these four of these five steps with our tool. And the fifth step, the profile and parallelization in debugging, is a step that actually is completely agnostic to us what technology you use. OpenMP, MPI, TotalView, LNAI, and a long list of languages and compilers that's supported by our tool. So just keep doing whatever you've been doing so well before, and we will happily play together with you. So I showed you in step A how you analyze the cache reuse and so on. I showed you in step C how the thread interaction and cache coherence fault sharing is tackled. I showed you in step D how the resource sharing, how you avoid cache waste. I gave you a long list of source code statements where that drags data into the cache that shouldn't have been there in the first place. And I also showed you a way how to try out new thread placements even without rerunning that parallel application that may take hours to run. Just produce a single fingerprint, and from that you can try out all the possible thread bindings, and we will help you find out which one is the best binding. Of course, the design flow is not always a linear design flow. There are lots of feedbacks. You may introduce new bugs when you perform an optimization and then remove some cache waste. There could be new possible optimizations that could resurface and so on. So it's not a straightforward design, and that's one reason why you think that a tool that can handle many of these steps in a single environment is a great thing. Okay, so to summarize, I talked about technology that's readily available in two different products. Actually, this is the second generation of our products that's packaged as SlowSpotter. SlowSpotter is a single-threaded analysis tool. It will do the step one and two on those issues that I talked about, how to treat the memory hierarchy as well as the cache waste issues. We have priced these tools quite low for single users to allow people to be able to get experience with them and get used to them without a huge cost. So this is a single user, single seat price I have here, $100,000 for commercial users, and we have a 50% rebate for people from academia. Then we have the Thread Spotter, which will do everything supported us and a little bit more to also do the multi-threaded analysis. So we do the fault sharing, thread placement, communication utilization, and all those things to help you with the step three and four in the examples that I show you. The availability is that we support all different x86, both 32 and 64-bit chips that are out there, and I was almost going to say a few more. You can actually specify your own cache hierarchy as well, employing a system that still hasn't hit the market with our analysis, as well as some embedded processors which are not x86 compatible processors for the analysis part of this tool. We support Windows, Linux, and Solaris. And what's new is that we're just about to release a Visual Studio integration. So right now we have a beta program running for Visual Studio users to use this tool in this integrated environment. So to summarize, Acumen have made this technology available. We would be happy if you would like to visit our website, check out the documentation, the white papers. There are recorded web demos on those pages as well, where we go through some of these examples in a little lower speed than what I've done in this webcast here today. Sales, the easiest way to order the tool is to just contact us at sales@acumen.com. And we, for people attending this webcast, we actually offer a 10% rebate if you place your order between July 31st. And if you have any other questions or comments, please comment us at info@acumen.com. And for example, you know, if you are really aching to be part of the beta program for the Visual Studio that we are running right now, don't hesitate. Please send us mail already today because we are really signing up all the different parties right now. So with that, I thank you for your time. And there's been a few questions actually that have been coming in here, so let me take those questions. One question is has to do with the design process itself. So I outlined the design process with four different steps, and this question states that, you know, the company, they do performance optimization as one big giant step at the end of the end of the product 2 days before the release. Is our technology going to be useful anyhow? And actually, it is very useful even if that's the way you treat performance. What we have is a single tool that will do the global analysis of your execution. If you give it a good real-world data input set, we will find exactly the place in the code, regardless of who wrote them. We will find the place in the code, and we'll also explain how to fix them. So even if that programmer has left the company, it's going to be quite easy to understand what kind of optimizations you need to do. Okay, another question here is, I talked about power consumption, power efficiency initially, and I didn't address that in my presentation. So actually, you're absolutely right. I should have put in a slide about that as well. Let me just mention a few comments about how the kind of optimization that I showed you, how that relates to power consumption. So if, for example, the libquantum example I showed you, when you change the data structure, that made that application run about twice as fast. And so the energy used for that execution is going to be about half of the energy for the unoptimized version of the program, because the application runs twice as fast. Actually, it's going to be better than that. So it's, you know, energy is the power consumption times the execution time. But since we avoid many of the costly DRAM accesses, it turns out that the power consumption is actually going to go down as well. So you're going to run your program for just half as long time, but the power consumption for that period of time is actually going to be lower and not higher with these kind of optimizations that we suggest. So that is going to be even better news for you. I have another, actually, a couple related questions here. One question is about what languages and compilers we support, and then I have a direct question: what is our support for managed code? So we, as I said, we are agnostic to the technology you use for the parallelization part of this code, and we actually are quite agnostic to what kind of language you use as well. Right now, however, we only support compiled languages. Okay, so C, C++, your favorite flavor of Fortran. We even have customers using Ada, you know, whatever language. It's transparent to us since we look at the execution of the binary. You don't even need the source code in order for you to do the analysis of your application. However, if you want us to pinpoint into your source code exactly which line you need to perform the optimization for, of course, you have to have the source readily available, and you also have to produce the debug information that we rely on that when we're going to find that source code line. Right now, we don't support managed code. If you run managed code with our tool, we're going to come up and tell you what performance problems you have. They're going to say you have a fault sharing problem. But we will not be able to pinpoint you to the right place in your source code. Rather, we would pinpoint the problem, the part of the virtual machine that executes those statements. So that we still have some work to do before we manage to use the managed code. It could still be very useful for the managed code just to know that you have a fault sharing problem or know that you have this utilization kind of problem and so on. Once you've known that, it would be much, much easier for you to gradually, you know, you do the interval halving kind of analysis and try to analyze or use a tool to pinpoint roughly the area where you have those kind of problems. Okay. Another question here is whether it works for optimized code. So that is actually it's related to the other questions. The optimization level that you apply is completely transparent to us, and we're going to rely on the debug information to pinpoint the source code line. We actually will have a much less of a problem to do that compared with normal debuggers, because we will find the most common way you access a source code line, and we don't care if there's been some reordering of instructions. So for example, when you single step with a debugger, it sometimes could be confusing if you use optimized code. We don't care. You know, as long as the compiler will help us find the source code line and point to that, that's going to be sufficient for you. So yes, it works for optimized code, and it worked much, much better than you would expect. Still, we're not going to be any better than the debug information that the compiler produced to us. I have another question here about how intrusive the tool is, and more specifically, what the slowdown is when you collect the data. So when you run a long-running application, let's say an application that runs for an hour or a couple of hours, the slowdown that we will contribute with is something in the order of 10%. So your application would run about 10% slower, and we use specific technology which is called batch sampling. We will statistically select periods of your execution where we will collect the data, and during other periods we will not collect any data and we'll run full speed. So that's when performance, when you care about performance, is when you have long-running applications. For short-running applications, that technique doesn't work. And for example, the example I showed you inside Visual Studio, it has a slowdown on the order of 10x. But on the other hand, the execution of that program takes 1 second. So if you have to wait 10 seconds to collect the data, you're not going to kick and scream about that. So the longer application run, the less intrusive it is. Another question we got here as well, probably the last one for today on this, do we need to link in any libraries? You know, do we have libraries that need to be linked in for this to work? Actually, no. And as I tried to explain before, we look at the behavior of the binary itself. And we don't care how you produce the binary. You didn't even have to have the source code. We can just attach to that binary while it's running, or if you want us to, we could start that application from scratch and then start sampling from the very beginning. But whatever you don't need to link or do anything special. Just have your binary running, and we'll attach to it, and we'll collect the data. Actually, I got a new question here as well, asking about the support for IA32 and 64. What about AMD? I should have been clear about that. We support; it's completely transparent to us if you use AMD 64, IA64, IA32, whatever 32 or 64-bit. X86 processor you use, that's going to work with this tool, regardless of produced and regardless of. And the interesting thing here as well is you can collect data using an Intel processor, and you can use this tool to do the performance optimization with respect to a AMD processor or vice versa, or a processor that hasn't been released yet, a processor you may not even have access to. So that's completely transparent for us, and that's fairly unique for our tool as well. And I got a question here. I don't fully understand the question, so the question asks if Intel works better with this tool. Absolutely. You know, it's what the kind of optimization that we come up with in general are optimizations that help you improve the locality, the data locality of your application. And in most cases, you know, it's generic optimization that would help you run better on any kind of architecture. What's unique for the AMD and Intel chips is that the cache hierarchy may be a little different. So an optimization for respect to AMD may not, you know, have the same effect on an Intel architecture and vice versa, but definitely yes. We definitely make Intel processors run much, much better. And actually the performance numbers I mentioned to you earlier were produced using Intel processors. LibQuantum example runs 2.7 times faster if you do the utilization optimization as well as the loop fusion on Intel processors. Got another question here. So asking, since our sampling used works on non-modified binaries, what kind of instrumentation and other post-processing compilations is needed? Actually, what we do here is, without telling you about it, is that we actually do binary rewriting while your application is running. So it starts off being an ordinary binary. We do little binary rewriting while it's running, and then we undo the binary rewriting where we don't want to collect more data information at all. So yes, we do some instrumentation, but that's nothing that you even are aware of. You don't need to do any post-compilation processing at all. Just take your favorite PowerPoint or application and attach to it, and we will collect data. Okay. We're running closer to the top of this hour here. Let me once more thank you for spending time with us here at Acumen and listening to our technology that we certainly are very excited about. And, you know, we've been around for a couple of years, so we've tried out this on many, many high-profile customers. Some of them are mentioned on our home pages. Please, don't hesitate to ask us if we have any more questions. And with you sending email. And with that, I hand back to Heather again to our moderator for this session. Heather?
All right. Thank you so much, Eric, for your presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to mention that you can print a PDF copy of this slide deck. To do that, just click the printer icon in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. This does conclude today's live meeting. Thank you all for joining us. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of the event.